This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 226 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Doing well, David. You know, the CES event that takes place each year is going on in Las Vegas as we record this. And there's a lot of drone news coming in from that event.
Okay, and for all of those listeners out there who don't know what CES is, do you want to help them with that?
Well, it used to be known as the Consumer Electronics Show, but I don't know, for some reason, a couple of years ago, they decided that they were just going to call it officially CES, but it's the Consumer Electronics Show. It's that annual show where all kinds of vendors, manufacturers show their wares, show the kinds of things that they're working on and might even go to market with this year. And there's quite a bit of unmanned aircraft activity coming out of the show. And I think we've got some of that we'll talk about this episode.
Well, I think that's a good thing. And this is, I guess, Paris or Farnborough for electronic geeks. And so I think we probably should get started since there's a lot of news to cover. Well, like Max said at the beginning of the show, we're going to talk about CES. And the first thing that caught my eye was from reviewjournal.com, drones fly over the Bellagio fountains during Las Vegas's CES. So following the Super Bowl last year and some other events, now it looks like they did a even bigger show with 250 light emitting shooting star drones over the Bellagio fountains, which if you haven't been to Las Vegas, the Bellagio fountains are quite well known. They do their own sort of dancing water show. So this is kind of cool and very attention getting for the convention. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. What a great way to have all the participants look up in the night sky, wonder what was going on if they didn't know already, and then learn that these are the Intel drones. And they put on a really nice show. There's a video. There's actually quite a number of videos out there, I think, but we have one that we'll put in the show notes that lets you get an idea of this particular drone show. David said 250 of these drones, and they just, you know, David, they move in such perfect unison that it's quite spectacular. As Intel notes in the video, they take a lot of safety precautions when they put on a presentation like this. They have spotters. They make sure that there are no manned aircraft or other aircraft, I guess, in the nearby vicinity. And they have a way to, you know, quickly bring all the drones back down if that should become necessary. But we also see that they're planning another show coming up in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, and that would be the 2018 Winter Olympics in Seoul, Korea, South Korea. So I'm sure that will be spectacular. I don't think I saw whether it was the opening or closing ceremonies, but I'm sure Intel has been working on something for a long time for a program of that magnitude. And we've moved from the Super Bowl to this to a global stage. So I'm really looking forward to these spectacular shows. And like you said, it is kind of a marvel to watch them be a fireworks display controlled. It's really cool.
Well, David, remember the Volocopter. We've talked about the Volocopter a couple of times, and there was an appearance of the, I guess, next generation Volocopter at CES.
And it flew, albeit tethered, but it did fly. Volocopter, of course, is from Germany, and they've been also test flying it in Dubai. So, you know, part of this show we've talked about, this is the fuel cell digest show, and I think I think that we've also sort of went from the FAA news of the week, but it also seems to be that air taxis or unmanned taxis seem to be a weekly event also. Bell Helicopter announced their unmanned taxi also at CES. It's kind of amazing that when we started this drone show, you wouldn't be expecting that we'd be talking about manned drones. How's that for an oxymoron?
Autonomous flying taxis. And Dubai is serious about this. They're looking to put that service into place sometime in the early 2020s, which isn't that far off. So, as you mentioned, David, they flew it at CES, tethered, indoors also. They did this in one of the stages. But the thing actually lifted off the ground. I think the first time we ran across this concept, I had a hard time taking it completely seriously because it's such a large device and you've got these, you know, these big rotors and so many of them. And, you know, are you really going to be able to fly people autonomously in a taxi service? But, you know, the reality of it is that we're moving closer and closer to that. And here we also see that Intel is collaborating with Volocopter, which we haven't seen much noise about that, but at CES anyway, we understand that Intel was making sure that was known, that they had a role in this project. So very cool.
And in other news, Unique news, this was from The Verge. Unique announces the Typhoon H Plus alongside some fixed wing and racing drones. Unique's Typhoon H got announced. Now, the Typhoon H is $1,800, but it is geared towards pro photographers and videographers. It has a 1-inch, 20-megapixel sensor, a 4K video at 60 FPSs, improved low-light performance. I thought that was kind of interesting because we're not supposed to be flying at night. And out the first half of 2018, and like we said, $1,800. This looks like a nice piece of kit, and Unique is going after that other company, DJI. So it's interesting to see at least there's somebody trying to beat the competition.
Yes. Another drone that Unique announced was their first fixed-wing drone. This is the Firebird FPV. Now, it has a camera as well, a nose-mounted camera. They are saying that they will expect about a 30-minute flight time from this, which is pretty consistent, I think, with a fixed-wing drone's typical capabilities. And like the Typhoon H Plus, they expect the Firebird FPV to be out in the first half of 2018, sometime in the next 6 months, I guess. And that has a price point around $700.
Which is reasonable for a fixed-wing FPV, though one wonders how many people can fly FPV. But this, I thought, was the really cool thing. They're coming out with high-def racing drones. It's got protected blades, durable construction, and beginner modes. So it's designed to be raced fast and so you can learn and break it. But Max, you and I have talked about racing. One of the things that's been a challenge is when you're flying first person, being able to send both high quality video back to fly it, as well as it needed necessary for it to be a good spectator sport.
Right.
And this, I think, is going to be good, which is the onboard camera can record 1080p at 60 FPSs, a low latency download link. And the other part of this is kind of cool is a flip up feature to help the drones get back into the air. So basically it flips, if you land it on its back, there's a mode that flips it back up so it can take off again, which just, that sounds cool and gives me goosebumps because mine always seems to land on its rotors anyway. So, and $179.99 or $180 US sounds like a good price point for a racing drone and something that can get you into that aspect of UASs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is an interesting market, the beginner's racing drone. So all of these first half of 2018, we should probably mention that a lot of products that get announced at CES in general, not just this year in particular, but a lot of the products never make it to market. Sometimes the manufacturers are actually proposing, let's say, products to look and see what the reaction is. And then if they have a positive reaction, then proceed to manufacture these things. I suspect in the case of Unique, however, that these are probably going to be produced in the first half of 2018, as they say, and be available. I just wanted to mention that Junior21 in our Slack team has been posting some photos from CES. He's got a photo of the drone safety booth that was there, a photo of the Bellagio light show that he took, as well as a police drone and a new Yamaha Fraser. This is, I believe, the drone that they've been using in Japan for agricultural spraying and applications like that.
Yeah, and they're really nice photographs. So we're going to have a link to them in the show notes. And incentive for people who to be part of our Slack team to get these kind of inside attributes. You can always join our Slack team by sending us an email to at feedback@theuavdigest.com. That's theuavdigest.com, Bill.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. I know. So there's, I think, probably more news from CES to come. And if we discover some additional drone-related items that we want to pass along, you can look forward to that next week. But David, maybe we should move away from CES for a little bit and talk about some other things going on.
It sounds like a good idea, and I don't think we can get much farther away than Russians in Syria. This was from theaviationist.com, and this is about the use of drones in asymmetrical warfare. My co-host wanted me to talk about what, with being the military historian, what asymmetrical warfare is. And that's using unconventional techniques against a conventional army. The Vietnam War was a asymmetrical war. We were using tanks and bombers, and the North Vietnamese were using things like bicycles. So in this case, a Sukhoi Su-24 fencer got attacked by some drones.
There are photos that were being posted in social media that show the tail of this Su-24 with some, well, with a gaping hole in it. And there are reports that the insurgents have been using commercially available quadcopters. They've been modifying them to deliver explosives, things like mortar rounds and grenades and things like that. So, yeah, very asymmetrical. Here you've got Su-24s versus modified, don't know what, some kind of quadcopter.
And simply, you know, a quadcopter that is designed to go on a suicide mission. You just strap some mortar rounds to it or a grenade, and it will detonate upon impact. However, the Russians have been trying to combat this. And they have intercepted some of these drones. And what they're using is the Pantsir-S2 integrated missile system and gun vehicle, which is designed to attack incoming missiles via a high-rate firing anti-aircraft gun or a Gatling gun. So what you do is you spray the area with bullets, and hopefully the bullets will hit the incoming vehicle. And it uses an advanced targeting radar. So it's interesting that we're using these weapons that we've come up with to take out things as simple as quadcopters.
Yeah, it almost seems like overkill a bit. But the real, I don't know, I guess scary part of all this is that we've worried about, speculated about the use of drones by terrorist organizations or other groups of people who are intent on creating some damage. And, you know, here we see apparently that happening, at least in Syria. So it makes you worry about what might happen elsewhere around the world. But it's kind of what we're kind of where we are right now.
Well, that's why we started this show, because there's more applications for good for drones than the bad ones. But we need to cover it all. And for every bad drone, we're going to come up with two or three good drones. So let's move on to tracking them. How about that?
Yeah, another example of a large company making some progress and developing some new capabilities in this space.
Yeah, and that would be in situ demonstrates the Broad Area Airspace Situational Awareness System for unmanned air systems. So they completed a successful flight demonstration of a ground-based UAS airspace situational awareness system. What are we talking about? Situational awareness? The fact that we can track what's going on with the drone in the airspace around the UAS.
And this is primarily directed towards commercial UAS operators, I think. And what they've created here is a capability where an operator can identify aircraft that are nearby, whether those aircraft are within line of sight or even beyond line of sight. And they note that they specifically want to be able to detect and avoid, they call it non-cooperative traffic. And it uses, here's a new acronym for us, ROIP, Radio Over Internet Protocol. They use that to communicate with air traffic control.
And it's using ADS-B and transponder returns. So in simplest terms, let's talk about the drone's flying along and it's noticing air traffic that's coming towards it. It radios the air traffic controllers to tell the air traffic controllers to get the uncooperative aircraft to be cooperative, either move left or right. We've talked about sense and avoid now for a long time. This, I think, is a real step forward, because when we started talking about sense and avoid, and when I did my interviews at Langley and we were talking about it, it was, how do you get the drone to do the sense and avoid with a manned aircraft who might not necessarily do what everybody thinks they're going to do? Hmm. The old adage is, if you're coming head on to somebody, everybody turns right or left. I don't remember off the top of my head. I forget my boating. I believe it's turn right.
I think so.
But you're flying, a drone turns right, and the pilot, who would be me, would forget which way to turn and also turns left, so that the drone and the aircraft are still heading the same way. In this case, the drone can report early enough to the air traffic controller, and the air traffic controller can advise the aircraft the proper way to avoid the air to the UAS. I know that's a lot of technical stuff for a non-technical person like myself, but it's really cool technology. I like sense and avoid. If Max likes fuel cells, I like sense and avoid technology. So in situ is cooperating with its parent company's Boeing Phantom Works. Now, for people who don't know what the Phantom Works is, the Phantom Works is based loosely on Lockheed's Skunk Works, which is their design, manufacture, prototype outside of the normal production scheme thing. And they call it the Phantom Works because it's based in St. Louis, based on McDonnell Douglas. Therefore, it's the Phantom Works, like Lockheed has the Skunk Works. So there's a military, I'm sure there's a military application because we really want this for all aspects. But the fact that In Situ is keeping the lead, that means it's going to have civilian applications also. And they're also, in November of last year, 2017, they did a BVLOS, or Beyond Visual Line of Sight, system study at Mississippi State University. So this is becoming a mature technology. What do you think, Max?
Yes, and I think it's worth noting that this particular program that has just been operating was sponsored by the Queensland government in Australia. So we have some flight tests that have gone on, like you say, last year in 2017 in the U.S., and now we have In Situ looking to do flight tests in Australia. So they're conducting flight tests in multiple locations in different countries.
And different environments.
Different environments.
Besides, if you're going to test something out in the open, I can't think of a better out in the open place than the outback in Australia. So Boeing is also moving on to doing some heavy lifting when it comes to UAVs. What do you think, Max?
They have an unmanned electric vertical takeoff and land multicopter. They call the Cargo Air Vehicle, or CAV. And they've unveiled the new prototype for this vehicle, according to a Boeing press release. Now, it is a prototype. It's designed to carry up to 500 pounds. And Boeing plans to, they say, quote, test and evolve Boeing's autonomy technology for future aerospace vehicles with this prototype. And it's kind of moderately sized. It has 8 counter-rotating blades. It measures 15 feet long, 18 feet wide, 4 feet tall, and it weighs 747 pounds.
Part of me wanted to know if that was planned.
I know, the 747. It was kind of ironic when I saw that. But they've recently conducted an initial flight test, and they've done this in Missouri at Boeing's Research and Technology Collaborative Autonomous Systems Laboratory.
Part of the Boeing Phantom Works. Boeing Horizon X, with its partners Boeing Research and Technology, led the development of the CAV prototype, which complements the eVTOL passenger air vehicle prototype development by Aurora Flight Sciences, a company acquired by Boeing last year. So Boeing is going in full heavy on this. I will say this, though. This is not a pretty anything. This is a fully functional, it looks like it's designed to do work and not look pretty. But there is a video. What do you think, Max? Do you think it'll get prettier over time, or do you think it's just designed to...
I think it's just simply a prototype and something that they put together to test out the functionality of the systems that they've developed. And yeah, I think that, you know, any kind of actual vehicle in the future probably will look quite a bit different. But as you say, David, we have a video. Drone Mama will put that in the show notes, so we invite you to take a look at that. It's kind of an, well, ugly duckling. Let's put it that way.
It's functional.
Functional.
It's functional over form. It's not a Chinook, but nothing can be. So we'll move on from there. First bad news of 2018.
Yeah, GoPro. Speaking of non-functional.
Well, I think now that we've started to see people who've gotten into the industry and have decided it wasn't going to work, and GoPro is the first one. They had a bad fourth quarter 2017, and we're now dealing with the ramifications of that.
They're cutting their global workforce 20%, which is pretty significant. But more to the point for this show, they are going to discontinue their drone business. So the Karma drone, which was launched in September 2016, is going to be no more pretty soon.
And let's go back a little bit. The Karma drone never really had a successful launch start, and because of its battery issues, and they just could not get up and running. And by that time, DJI had just sort of bulldozed their way into the industry and taken over. So I think they're going to stick with their cameras, although I don't know if GoPro cameras are now fading away. For a while there, they were like the thing. But they're going to finish selling off their existing Karmas with a Hero 6 Black GoPro for $1,200. One wonders, though, how many they're going to sell, because with them knowing they're going away, do you really want to take the chance of buying something you're not going to have any support of?
Well, they say that they're going to sell off the existing inventory, which I guess makes sense. The only other option is to write that off and pitch it. But they're going to sell that off, which suggests that besides the $200 discount that they're offering now, maybe that will increase as they try to move out the inventory. But they say they'll continue to service existing drones. And I think that's an important thing for them to do. But yeah, you know, competing against DJI is tough. We've already seen what's happened to 3D robotics. GoPro's decision, which I think maybe at the time was not a bad strategic move. As you said, their cameras were sort of on the top of the world. Everybody was putting GoPros on drones anyway. Why not sell the drones as well? But the competition is really stiff. DJI is a pretty mighty competitor. It probably makes a good business sense for GoPro to have reevaluated the business case for the Karma drone. And, you know, here we have it. It's going to fade away from their product line.
You know, and sometimes, Max, and this goes with any industry, sometimes you look at it and you go, that seems like a really good idea, but you don't really have the expertise to go into, you know. The logic being, from a marketing standpoint, was we want to sell more cameras. Well, here's a great way to sell the cameras is we're going to sell drones, but not necessarily understanding the impact of the drones. Likewise, sometimes one direction from a marketing standpoint is better than another. DJI purchasing camera companies after having the expertise in making the drones probably was the better route than GoPro, which was making the cameras and deciding that they could make drones too. So technology transfer doesn't necessarily work both ways sometimes. So, well, we're getting a little long, but we got a nice email from John Henry and for about a video of the week. He said, quote, in the last few episodes, you've mentioned you haven't been getting many viewer video submissions. That's true, folks. You can always submit them to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Here's one of my all-time favorites. It's several years old. Actually, it's from 2013. But it's also one of the earliest proof of concept examples on YouTube of controlling a UAV using thoughts measured by with an EEG. And it's a used a hack Star Wars Force Trainer along with Arc Labs ACE project. It's a video where someone's mind is controlling the UAV.
I'm not really familiar with the Star Wars Force Trainer. David, are you familiar with that? This is something that you, wear on your head and it measures your brain waves?
Right, and it helps you. It was a way of playing one of the Star Wars games. You used your mind to control the Force. You could, you know, you could use your mind to lift rocks, etc. So in this case, they used it to fly a drone. Autonomy Robotics and Cognition Lab, or ARC. ARC is a couple of is an initials that show up a lot. But so they took the Star Wars Force Trainer and they disassembled it and used the EEG to fly this helicopter through various obstacles using mind control. Now, John Henry did give us an important consumer safety note for the do not try this at home, which is evidently later versions of the Force Trainer encrypted the EEG signal, so you can't do the hack that they did before. So this is one of those don't try this at home because it's not going to work anymore. But it's neat. I've always thought using mind power and EKGs and those things to move items is always really cool. But I have those kind of thoughts all the time. So,
well, David, I see we also got some feedback from our friend Bill Berry, the NASA chief historian. Bill tends to pay attention to what we do and what we say. And he sometimes has some little corrections for us.
Well, I, you know, if I'm getting corrected by the head of the NASA History Department, I'm okay with that. And I do owe him an apology because I misspoke and I was a little confused. And that was last episode we talked, in episode 225, we talked about DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Administration. And I commented that DARPA was integral in installing winglets and coming up with the winglets program. Well, it was NASA and Dryden, and it was Richard Whitcomb who came up with the winglet technology. My apologies to everyone at NASA and Bill. And we'll put a link to the show notes for the Dryden Flight Research Center, but actually now, so I don't get yelled at later, it is actually now renamed to the Armstrong Flight Research Center, which is named after Neil Armstrong, the first person to walk on the moon. So thank you, Bill, for sending that in, and thank you for listening to us. And of course, tell all of your NASA friends that we'd love to have them on the show, like we had it when we went to NASA Langley. But so with that, I guess, Max, we should wrap this show up. What do you think?
Yeah, we want to thank all of you for listening to episode 226 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, where you can find links to the stories that we talked about, the videos, and all of that, you can find that at the UAVDigest.com/226.
And of course, you can find us on social media at UAV Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/theUAVDigest. Again, you can become part of our Slack listener team by sending us an email at feedback@theUAVDigest.com. The UAV channel is very active with lots of news and stories. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And all those links are available on our website. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.